travel to the far corners of the world can be frustrating, even for the best resourced of travellers. But imagine what it's like to be a wheelchair user with a hankering to sail Lake Titicaca, tour the Potala Palace, or traverse the great green Mongolian steppe. David Constantine is such a traveller, quadriplegic and yet disinclined to restrict his itineraries for that reason. He's the founder of the charity Motivation, which designs and manufactures wheelchairs for users in the developing world and trains disabled people in how to expand their horizons geographically and imaginatively. John McCarthy went to meet him. There's a hum of activity with students working singly and in groups, either at computer terminals or actually using good old-fashioned pen and paper, plotting and designing things. We are in a design studio at the Royal College of Art in London. David Constantine was a student here some years ago, designing a wheelchair for use in the developing world. How did you come to be doing that, David?
Yes, this is the design studio where I studied. I sat just over there by the window facing Kensington Gore in the park, which was beautiful. We literally came in one morning and there was a piece of A4 paper on all their desks saying your next 3 weeks project will be design a wheelchair for developing countries, and it's a competition. And Simon Pugh came over to me and said, Dave, do you want to team up on this? Smart, because I'd used a wheelchair for 8 years by then, and so I did know a bit about it, and we helped each other develop a design which we ended up winning the prize with.
What happened? Why were you using it?
I had a spinal cord injury in 1982 in Australia while I was on working holiday, and after I'd finished that I went off to the coast to Fraser Island with a couple of guys I'd met. We stopped in a big pool of water left by the tide, waist deep I suppose, and we were just mucking about, racing and diving into it. As I came down I hit my head on the bottom, on the sand, and then went to get out of the water and couldn't move. So I can move my arms now, but I couldn't move anything. And I sort of just knew I'd broken my neck, and I knew I'd paralysed.
What a devastating thing to have for a very active 21-year-old. One might imagine that after that awful accident, that clearly travelling was never going to be very easy, certainly, but looking back then. How did you get through that?
The first thing I did when I came out of hospital the first year was to buy myself a van and convert it to a camper van so I could travel around Europe, because there was no accessible hotels or B&Bs or anything then, and that sort of started a process of looking further afield. If you like, I could say I cheat, because I do have an assistant who comes with me, which I couldn't travel without my assistant.
I don't think I'd call it cheating. The first wheelchairs you had, were they sort of appropriate to you, or was your own design work thinking, actually, there's got to be a better way of doing this?
The first things we started really thinking about were what materials and what skills and what machinery might they have in a workshop. And we decided that actually we'd make them in a workshop that just had the ability to bend and cut, and they would have a drill of some kind, either a pillar drill or a hand drill. We thought through things like how they might have a stall to run a market, an umbrella attachment so that you could sit in the rain or the heat. We really tried to put those theories into a chair that was functional to the environment the people were living in. One of our sort of most popular chairs is a three-wheel chair, which we did in Cambodia. The tarmac in 1993, when we went to Cambodia, literally stopped outside Phnom Penh, and that was it. And there's a monsoon, and so it gets very muddy. And so we created this three-wheel chair that had a bigger front wheel, and it's just so much easier to push over rough ground.
As well as providing the hardware, there's training of educating people and offering the different attitude, an important part of what you do.
Absolutely, because we not only train people to assemble and fit the chairs properly, about how to get dressed, how to get into and out of a car or a bus, or how to get up a flight of stairs or down, and these skills, everyday wheelchair skills, are crucial. Some of the other things aren't so pleasant, in that I was meeting some mothers on a training course that we were running in Uganda, and they would explain that they had a child with cerebral palsy, and they found themselves being ostracised not only by the rest of the village but by their own family, and it was suggested to them that they had to just dump the child or drown him. And these were the mothers that stood tall and said, no, this is my child and I'm going to keep it and bring it up. and we were running a training to try and explain to mothers, you know, it's nothing to do with their fall.
Do you see that attitudes are changing, do you think?
Yes, a good example is that what we saw during the London 2012 Paralympics. I was in Afghanistan earlier this year where some of our wheelchair basketball chairs were being used in a tournament in Kabul. And when I interviewed some of the players who were, you know, ex-Mujahideen and injured in the war as civilians and so on, they often said, I go out on the street and people stare at me, I come in here and I get in this chair and I get on this court and I'm a player.
So this is where you worked designing the wheelchair, David. Can you take us to another part of the college that was also important in the development of the project?
The next most significant place, apart from the bath, would be the Lower Gulbenkian Hall, and that was one of those life-changing moments.
David, you brought us downstairs now in the RCA. Currently it's being divided up because some here students are out preparing for an exhibition. What is the importance of this room?
This is the hall where we actually presented for the final of the wheelchair competition. Just seeing all the students around putting their stuff up, it does really bring back memories. It's great memories.
We have sitting with us is a former rector of the RCA and indeed a professor in your time, David, Christopher Fraley. When did you first meet David?
In his first year, before the prize, actually, because David was frightfully dutiful, came to my lectures. The thing about David was, right from the word go, is that he was one of these students that used the department he was in as merely a base for grazing around all sorts of areas of the college, and I think the best students always do that. He was in computer design, but gravitated towards product design. And you must remember, this is the late 80s when celebrity design and Philip Stark strawberry chorus, you know, the kind of thing at the moment. But David always had this very, very strong idea of design, sort of transforming people's lives, really.
But the design was to make something that could be used in the developing world. I mean, do you think you actually need to get out there and explore the real world or the far distant world where these things might be used?
Absolutely. It wasn't really until we went to Bangladesh and India and discovered really what the needs were that we were really able to take the design forward.
And I think one important aspect of it was that right from the word go, I think you had this idea of sowing a seed on the ground that they could make their own once you'd left. So it had to be simple to construct out of recycled bicycle parts.
Yeah, in Bangladesh it was 28-inch rickshaw wheels, which were Chinese for all the rickshaws, which there were thousands of in Dhaka. And what it meant was then you would provide somebody with a chair which, if they lived in the remotest village, they could get a new tyre, a new spoke, bearings, and get it repaired.
And that's very important, I think, because otherwise design becomes a sort of subtle form of colonialism almost.
You decided then to go out into the field and go there and explore how well it would actually work. How were you received as a Westerner going there within the world?
Very interestingly, when we landed at Dhaka, the first thing the passport control guy just sort of nodded at me, didn't even sort of ask me. He just said, is he a peasant or is he just abnormal? And to which we all howled and laughed at. There was a fair question because they would expect people from the UK or from the States or wherever who were in a wheelchair to be able to afford to get better and get out of the wheelchair. Or it must be abnormal, I must have been born like this.
I just remembered the punchline of that because I thought you said, actually, I'm from Essex. Oh, that's all right, then.
Yeah. But if we went out into the street, I would be surrounded by no less than 100 people quite often. I went out photographing early in the morning.
How did that feel?
It's very refreshing, actually, the honesty of it. It's like children. They'll come up to you and say, why are you sitting in there?
But you mentioned the camera, see, that's fairly indicative of David's attitude to design. Always interested in photography. Wanted to crack the problem of how can he develop a stand for the camera while sitting in his chair. And with someone, he co-designed an attachment for the camera to actually rest on his chair.
Now, I've got these two lugs built into my chair.
Oh, I see.
That relates to another aspect we haven't talked about, which is the look of the wheelchairs. You always said, you know, why must these things look like bits of medical equipment? Why can't you have a wheelchair where a young man says, God, that's a wicked wheelchair. I really want to get up in the morning and get into that. And that was part of the motivation as well, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool with really
funny. Yeah, no, we built up a whole unit post-David called Design for Our Future Selves. You know, cutlery, which if you've got arthritic hands, you can pick up. It's not naff to design for granny, and that design's a good deal too serious to be left to youth culture alone.
When did you decide to set up Motivation?
was being in Bangladesh. It was a centre for spinal cord injury. And the lady that ran the centre, at the end of the week, we were about to leave, and she said, "This is amazing what you've brought to us here. Would you come back and do this for a few months when you leave college?" And so we did. And we came up with the name Motivation, because really that's what we're about. It's not just about wheelchairs seating, it's about motivating people. There's somewhere between 80 and 110 million wheelchair users in the world, and 80% of those live in developing countries, and so there's still a lot of work to do.
That was John McCarthy and Christopher Fraley talking to David Constantine.